and Answers begins right now.
The LGBTQ ideology is bombarding our kids daily at school and in the media, with cartoons, Disney, and children's curriculum promoting the LGBTQ ideology. How do we talk to our kids about this ideology? One of the places to start is helping our students understand the culture's definition of truth. And the true definition of truth. At the 2024 Evidence and Answers Conference, Amy Davison of Mama Bear Apologetics explained how to help our students understand the differences and how to engage the LGBTQ ideology when they encounter it each day. You're tuned to Evidence and Answers radio broadcast with our host, Pat Zukeran. Pat is an author, teacher, and international speaker in the area of Christian apologetics, the defense of the Christian faith. During our time together today, we will begin with part one of message four, taken from our 2024 Evidence and Answers Apologetics Conference series, entitled Talking to Your Kids About LGBTQ Issues.
Please give a warm aloha welcome to Amy Davison.
Hey everyone, welcome to Saturday's session. I am so thankful that you guys are here today. We are going to be diving in on some top questions that your kids are going to be going to ask about LGBTQ ideology. And this is so important for us to address because we are commanded in Scripture not to be held captive by false, deceitful philosophies. And the only way we are not held captive is if we are able to evaluate them, recognize them, and see them head on. Now, we saw yesterday during the presentation with regarding new battlefields, what's coming at your kids. And the information that's coming at your children is starting from the age of toddlers. So that means we have to start having really uncomfortable conversations with our kids at younger ages than any of us ever had them. In fact, for most of us, we didn't even get the majority of these conversations. We are now trying to get them all at once. So hopefully this session will be a blessing to you. But now, before we get started, perhaps it's helpful to sort of see how we got here in the first place. Because I don't know about you, it seems like everything's spiraling very quickly downhill. And I'm like, what in the world? How did this happen? And it's actually been in the works since about the 17th and 18th century. So initially, early philosophers and scholars recognized that to be able to know God, to know reality, it was this beautiful blending of truth, of science, of the arts, theology. It was amazing. But people are tribal by nature. Everybody likes to divide themselves into whether or not they're Cowboys fans, Chiefs fans, Team Edward, Team Jacob. We are all good at trying to divide ourselves off. And that's exactly what we saw happening with the concept of truth. So during the 17th and 18th century, the modernists, they didn't want to have an authority figure whatsoever. And what was the biggest authority figure, do you think, during the 17th and 18th century? The church, absolutely. So what they wanted is to have a worldview apart from that formal theological authority. And so what the modernists said is, no, the only way to know truth is through the study of logic, math, and science. In fact, it's through this study and studying these things and focusing on these things that we can not only achieve world peace, we can gain power, and everything's going to work out well. How do you think that worked out? Not super great. In fact, how many of you have ever seen the movie Inside Out? Okay, a few hands. Okay, so think of it Inside Out. It's about a little girl, and she's got five core emotions in her brain. She's got joy, disgust, sadness, anger, and fear. And so the modernists were a bit like joy. They were very optimistic. They thought we could know all the things, but very quickly they realized that, you know what? We are finite human beings. We do not know all the things. And what happened was this sort of overcorrection that was very dramatic. And that's how we got postmodernism. So postmodernism says, wait, if I can't know everything, then I must not be able to know anything. And so what they say is truth doesn't exist at all. Instead, all that we have is you've got your truth and I've got my truth and she has his truth and he has his over here. And that's all okay because we can all coexist. But that doesn't make sense. It was popular because, again, people were able to customize their own religion, like going to a buffet. They'd put it on your plate, and then whatever didn't work out, that's okay. Just push that aside and go bring something else. It's this trial and error process as you discover you. For women, this was hugely popular in the 90s and 2000s because, remember, ladies, where was the power? Within us. And we just had to channel all of that power, and that's how we can find and reach enlightenment and comfort within our own bodies, power, empowerment, all that good stuff. So that was postmodernism that came through. But I think we've shifted. I don't think we're in the postmodern era anymore. Because what happens is if I have my truth and you've got your truth and everybody here's got their own truth, then everything is just subjective. It's a matter of opinion. And there's no power in opinion. I mean, nobody goes to war over those things. They go to war over truth. So our culture had to shift its understanding of truth into something solid, into something tangible. And I think where we're shifted now is we're no longer postmodern. This is my theory. Feel free to disagree with me if you think I'm in error. I think we're in what's called the meta-modernist era. And this is what it looks like. Under metamodernism, now think of the word meta. Meta means transcending. And we often think when we hear the word meta, we think of metaverse and this alternative reality. Think of it within a video game strategy. The metaverse is an artificial reality that you can now go into. You customize your avatar. You can actually, did you guys know this? You can buy property, exchange money within the metaverse. It is its own artificial reality. And what are you? You are a god within this reality. So what metamodernism says is we no longer have truth and value. So look at here. So look at how truth was divided up. You had the facts, well, that's where science and logic would fall into. And then you had the values of postmodernism. They really elevated the arts, theology, all of these studies here. So they had a fact and value split. But what metamodernism has, it has a truth and harm split. And this is very important. So what happens is truth, notice this circle here, that is a circle of experience. So if something validates my experience, it passes through that circle, and now it falls into the truth category. So this is where we get desires, affirming care, our subjective identity, that is what's true. And anything that doesn't affirm or isn't validated through our experience, well, now all of a sudden that gets tossed out, but it isn't called false, that's not strong enough. It's now called harm. You are harming me. I have a safe space. Churches are shut down for preaching harm, meaning preaching biblical truth. That's what's going on in Canada right now. That's why they have outlawed discussion that there's male and female, and pastors can't even teach on that anymore without risking imprisonment. Same with children. Parents are not allowed to protect their children from transgender ideology, because if the government in Canada believes that you are keeping your child from transitioning, your child will be removed and you will be imprisoned in the process. That's what's going on right now. But look at what this does to objective reality. So logic, if logical arguments don't affirm someone's subjective truth, well, now that gets tossed out. Theology is also gone. Biology. We have nurses and doctors today who are now denying the fact that male and female exist, regardless that it actually does exist, because they're having to affirm an ideology. The ideology supersedes biological fact. And language is now being warped and shifted. And this is the worldview we're living, because now it's no longer I have my truth and you have yours. Now it's I have my truth and my truth is now your truth. And this truth now has to change how we form education, how we see the body, how we practice medical and psychological care, and how we even bring up our children. Today, schools are starting sex education at kindergarten to be able to indoctrinate them to an LGBTQ ideology. They're starting out young. In Oregon, where my sister lives, they actually have daycares, affirming daycares, to where toddlers can go and make pride projects and things. And they're coached on, okay, you're not actually a boy, you're not actually a girl, you'll decide that later. But I mean, I just had a little girl. I don't need my kindergarten teacher to tell me who she is. I knew it from setting eyes on her the second she was born. But that's where we're facing now. So this shift in truth is important for understanding where our culture is going right now, because it shapes how we have to discuss this ideology with individuals. Because now what's true is what is promoted by the largest entities, and Hollywood, the news agencies are all operating from super alt-left ideologies that are pushing forward and trying to change even history as we know it. And this has actually started out, like I said, it started out in the 17th, 18th century, but then things really got kicked off during second wave feminism. And so what really started this, in fact, LGBTQ, I don't know if you know this, it actually started as a form of feminism. So Simone de Beauvoir was a French feminist and philosopher. And what she saw is during the 1950s, ladies, we weren't exactly treated all that great in culture. So gals, pretty much the only jobs that we could do is to be a secretary, maybe work as a phone operator, and mostly you were just supposed to be in the home. You could not go to college. You could not own a bank account or have a bank account or even a credit card without your husband's written approval. And so this really bothered Simone de Beauvoir. And so she saw this, wait a second, if we're anchoring these rules in biology, in the fact that I'm a woman, well, there's no escaping that. I can't stop being a woman. So I have to come up with something else where it's rooted. And so this concept of gender, meaning this mental construct of how we see ourselves, has to be created instead. Because then what we can do is, if we separate biology from our mental desires or our mental reality, well, all of a sudden now this is ever shifting and we can't ground it. And so if we can't ground it, then we can't base these oppressive laws on it. So one thing she said, one of her famous quote is, one is not born, but rather becomes a woman. What she was saying is that it's society that determines what a woman is, not your biology. And this deeply resonated with a Berkeley professor by the name of Judith Butler. So Judith Butler, she is lesbian. I would think that she would probably quantify herself as sort of non-binary based on how she dresses. She was really upset by the idea of what womanhood was. So she saw womanhood, and what it was promoted to her was very frilly, very girly. And that wasn't her style. That wasn't her personality. And so what she encouraged and still encourages, as she's still teaching, is to create gender trouble, meaning that we need to completely obliterate this idea of sex binaries, gender binaries. And so what she says is, gender isn't something one is, it's something one does, meaning you solidify your gender based on how you act. If you act girly, then you are a girl. If you act boyish, then you are a boy, or if you like boy things or girl things. But did you guys catch that? She disliked the gender binary, only to use gender binary to affirm gender trouble. It's completely illogical. But that's what was setting the pace. That's how we achieve sort of freedom as a society. In fact, the goal of gender theory actually is to create an androgynous society. You should not be able to tell what's male and what's female. And ad campaigns are really good at doing that. A few years ago, we were in the mall, and we walked past Gap, and we were looking at these individuals modeling clothes. My husband and even my kids were sitting there, and my kids were like, "Mom, which one's the boy?" I'm like, "Baby, I have no idea." That's the ultimate goal. Because what happens is, the belief there is that if there's male and female, well, then it's female that's going to be oppressed by the male. So we have to destroy both to free them. But you can't rescue women by destroying them in the process. But that's the goal that's going on. So that is what has led to what we're seeing now making its way in schools with regards to teaching of gender. Now, we created this graphic about 2 years ago, and it's actually really outdated. So they don't use a gingerbread person anymore because it's too masculine. They use a unicorn, because a unicorn can be either male or female. It's a little more flexible. But for the sake of the fact that this was already uploaded in my Canva slide, we're just gonna go with the gingerbread person. As you are not a whole person, instead, you are broken up into pieces. So four pieces. So check this out. You've got your identity that's rooted in your head, your experience, and define your gender. It's based on how much you align or don't align with strict gender binaries. So who you are, your identity, is rooted in how you feel. Your attraction, that's your romantic attraction, who you are attracted to, men, women, both. Then you have your sex, that's your biology, to where when they do a blood test, they're able to see whether you're male or female. That you can actually do, it's really awesome. They can do that now just with a simple blood test at about 12 weeks of development when you're pregnant. About 12 weeks pregnant, they could do a blood test, and the blood of your baby is running through your veins. They can test and find out what your baby is biologically. That's how we found out we were having a girl. And then you have expression. Expression is how you dress to tell the world how you identify. Now, most often, expression and identity go hand in hand, but also one's attraction ties into it, because again, you're going to dress in a way to attract the people you are attracted to. Now, if any of you are math nerds, what this means is these four combinations, you know how many it allows for? How many combinations? 10,000. You have 10,000 options just based on these four. And again, there's actually a fifth one. They actually have a friendship category. So not only do you have identity, attraction, sex, and expression, you also have friendship that can be there, who you're attracted to for having friends, whether you like having guy friends, gal friends, that sort of thing. But is this who we are? Are we to break ourselves up, or are we a whole person? What this does is this shows that we're almost like those Russian nesting dolls. There's pieces of us. Or like, remember that game in the 90s? It was called Cooties. And you got to build the little bug or a Mr. Potato person. You're just supposed to piece yourself together. And that's what they're telling little kids is, baby, you're not a boy. You're not a girl. You don't know what you are, but you'll figure that out by experience, by what you like to do. And in fact, this was actually celebrated in a Cocomelon skit There was two dads with a little boy who looked to be about two, maybe three, and they were coaching him to experiment with all sorts of outfits, and they were really celebratory when the little boy picked a princess crown and a tutu, and he was dancing around, and they were celebrating that, and that was in Cocomelon, geared toward 18-month-olds. So this is starting young. These alternate, the compromising of truth has led to the compromising of who we are as individuals, the fracturing of the human person into something that is customizable based on experiences and likes. And now we're telling children, not only do they not know who they are, but they need to figure it out, preferably by the age of eight. So that way, if you do not align with your biological gender, we can now get you on hormone therapy. That's what's being pushed to kids. And that's why it's so important for us to have these conversations young. I've had parents say, but Amy, I don't want to have these conversations. I'm like, I understand that, but the world already is. So we got to get in the game. So now how this has made an impact is our kids are now questioning what is going on in my life. If I don't feel super girly, does that mean I'm not a girl? Or if I don't feel like a hardcore raw man, then am I really not a man? And so your kids may be asking, you know, what is gender dysphoria? And unfortunately, if you were to ask sort of the average physician or psychologist, you're not going to get a full picture of what gender dysphoria is. And that's because psychologists and doctors today have to align with gender ideology or they will lose their practice. They will lose it. They will be shut down. They will not be able, they will lose their tenure if they're teaching at universities. In fact, there was just a university professor. He taught biology, he taught it for 20 years, and he taught his normal lesson on male and female, and he was fired from his job because of it. It hadn't been a problem all those 20 years before, but now it is. Why? Because our culture has shifted. In fact, I had a friend of mine, we got to talk to some counselors. They were psychologists. And so I asked them, I was like, okay, you're believers, you're psychologists. I mean, you know the baggage that is within this, and this information. Are you able to write papers on this? Are you able to discuss this at all? And they go, nope. We are not allowed to discuss it with our patients. We can't write papers. She said, we're not allowed to write papers because it would be a waste of time. No one would review them. They would never be peer reviewed. They would be shut down first. And for most, when it comes to this sort of thing, your scientific writings, they want it to be peer reviewed for it to be counted credible, but there's gatekeeping there because if you do not affirm with the ideology, then you cannot be peer reviewed. So what is there? Inherent confirmation bias in modern psychology and medical care, which is now filtering into how we teach kids. So with our kids, what we want to do is when they ask us, what is gender dysphoria? Because this is a common question. In fact, many girls, as we'll see here in a second, will experience this either personally or relative to their friend group by the time they hit middle school. So what is gender dysphoria? So gender dysphoria is nothing new. In fact, actually, it has been known for existence for over 100 years, but it was primarily relegated to boys. So boys, traditionally, were the ones that wrestled with gender dysphoria. This started or came about between the ages of 3 to 4. And what it was is these little boys would just very insistent, persistently say, no, I'm a girl. Mama, I'm a girl. No, I don't want to play with that stuff. I'm a girl. I want to go and hang out with the girlfriends. They were insistent and persistent. But what two words best describe any sort of kid, right? All kids are insistent and persistent. That doesn't mean what they're experiencing is true. For some of these kids, they're just confused on gender norms. There was a psychologist, Dr. Leonard Sachs. I'm going to show you his book at the end of this slide. He encountered some of these children. One of these boys who was very insistent and persistent that he was actually a girl, when he started asking him very simple question, why do you think that you're a girl? The little boy said, well, my brothers are always pushing me around and shoving me. And my dad says we can't push girls. So I'm a girl. So then they won't push me anymore. Was this child really suffering from gender dysphoria? No, he just didn't want to get clubbed anymore by his older brothers. We can understand that. The only reason he found out about it, though, was by asking that question. But do you think psychologists and doctors are asking those questions of the kids today? Absolutely not. Because the goal is affirmative care. The goal is to transition as many kids as possible. So the second a child says, I don't think I'm a girl, or I don't think I'm a boy, they are fast-tracked to gender-affirming care, which we're going to see in a second. But the real tragedy is gender dysphoria. Kids outgrow it. 70 to 90% of children who are gender dysphoric at a young age will outgrow it if they're allowed to progress through puberty normally, meaning they are not put on hormone blockers. Because what happens during puberty, your brain is flooded with all sorts of hormones, your bodies change, and it is actually puberty itself that helps orient children to understand, wait a second, no, I'm comfortable in my body. Now, that doesn't mean puberty isn't going to be uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable for everyone. But this discomfort doesn't mean that your biology is wrong. It just is part of the process. But that's actually one of the criteria that you can take on online quizzes to see whether or not you're gender dysphoric. Are you uncomfortable in your current state? Yes, most teenagers are. I think all of us at one point in time as a teenager, we're going through some sort of mental crisis. Well, the answer they're given, well, that might be that you're gender dysphoric. Logically valid argument, completely unsound. But if we're not speaking truth, our kids won't hear that. So early onset gender dysphoria was the norm up until about 15 years ago, 10 years ago. And then we saw something creep in that was absolutely brand new and is called rapid onset gender dysphoria. Now, gender dysphoria affected boys, but rapid onset gender dysphoria specifically targets girls, especially around the time of puberty. It targets girls. This is what happens is girls will be fine one day, and then the very next, they will come home and say, "Mom, I think I'm really a boy." And it's out of the blue. The parents are completely caught off guard. They don't know what motivated it. There's no previous gender nonconforming. GNC is gender nonconforming. I had to abbreviate it because it's super long. There's no previous gender nonconforming behavior. And what Lisa Littman, she's a psychologist, found in her studies is that with these girls, actually 63% of them had a co-occurring mental disorder, meaning they had depression, anxiety, eating disorders. And 40% of them, yes, 40% had borderline personality disorders, meaning they're borderline schizophrenic. What this shows actually is that gender dysphoria more often is a symptom, not a cause. Gender dysphoria can actually be a symptom of a lot of things. For one, confining gender roles. This happens within very conservative, maybe people groups, especially Muslims. This can happen as well, where there are gender, very strict gender roles for each one to fit into. But if you've got a daughter who is not the nurturing, maternal, homemaking type, well, then she may believe, wait a second, maybe I'm supposed to be a guy because I'm more type A. I want to be working. I'm more hands-on. I'm more tactile. I want to maybe be a mechanic, that sort of thing. She will think she's supposed to be a guy. It also can happen from abuse. So in fact, gender dysphoria, that actually used to be a trigger for psychologists to look into whether or not a child is being abused, but now they can't do that anymore. They're told not to. But abuse can actually do this. In fact, you'll actually see this in many, many testimonies. This isn't a 100% anchor for gender dysphoria, but it is a very common happening that when someone is abused, they will often identify or want to identify as the opposite gender because they believe they won't get victimized if they're the opposite gender. That happened with another girl. She went in, she said, "I'm a boy." Psychologist asked, "Well, why do you think you're a boy?" It turns out there was a few boys at school that were assaulting her in the bathroom. And she thought, "Well, if I was a guy, they wouldn't do that to me." So that's why she wanted to be a boy. If he had not asked that question, she would have been put on hormones. Her breasts would have been removed. She would have been chemically sterilized. And it never would have addressed the abuse that's happening. More often, she would have succumbed to more abuse at the school. One simple question alleviated all of that heartache. But most psychologists, if they were found out for even asking that question, their practices would be shut down because it's affirming only. Autism and OCD behaviors can also lead to gender dysphoria. And that's because one of the characteristics of autism or OCD is hyper-focusing on one singular thing. So there is a TV show out called Atypical. And in the show, the boy who was autistic was hyper-obsessed with penguins. He could bring everything back to penguins. And so that was his obsession. And so also with children who are autistic or on the spectrum or have OCD behaviors, those children actually feel uncomfortable within their own bodies already. So you throw in this discomfort of in own bodies. Then they get an argument saying, well, if you're uncomfortable in your body, that could mean that you're another gender. Well, then they hyper-focus on that, and that can lead to gender dysphoria and the pursuit of gender-altering surgeries. In fact, autistic and OCD children are 30% more likely to suffer from gender dysphoria than children without autism or OCD. Cultural indoctrination, we see this happening in schools, and I got to see, well, it wasn't firsthand. I was doing a Q&A with a Bible study group in Europe, and one of the grandmothers, she had asked me, she goes, "Okay, I've got a granddaughter who's 8, and the 8-year-old came home from school one day, and she said, 'Mom, I'm a boy.' And so mom and dad went to the school, and they said, 'Okay, what is going on here? You are not allowed to transition her. You are not allowed to call her by a boy's name. You do not refer to her as a boy. What is going on that led my daughter, who was not gender dysphoric before, to all of a sudden tell us that she is a boy?'" And what it turned out to be is this child was an only child. So she was used to being the center of attention. And she was just recently enrolled in public school. And her class had about 30 students in it. So she was no longer the center of attention. But what happened is whenever a student in her class would change genders, the teacher would throw a party for that student, and the girl wanted a party.
Once again, we've run out of time. Thank you for joining us here on Evidence and Answers. Our goal is to bring you the love of Christ and to equip you in your faith to always be ready to give a response. If you would like to hold an apologetics conference or series of teachings at your facility, contact Pat by calling him in Hawaii. That number is 483-0586. Or you may email him through the Evidence and Answers website. That's evidenceandanswers.org. Be sure to browse through our listing of topics on our site. We have everything from atheism to Zen Buddhism. You will also find articles and additional audio for you to listen to or download. An additional location to find Pat's messages is on YouTube. Look up Evidence and Answers and hit the subscribe button. To keep quality broadcasts like Pat's on the air, we rely on generous financial support from you, our listeners. Donating is simple. Just log on at evidenceandanswers.org. Evidence and Answers is grateful for one of our sponsors, the Honolulu Christian Church. If you don't have a home church and are looking for a place to grow in your faith, check out the Honolulu Christian Church. For service times, log in at honoluluchristian.org. Join us again next time on the air or online as we provide compelling reasons for faith in Christ. That's Evidence and Answers with Pat Zukeran. Wait.